Jamie.
And I'm Beth. Welcome to Thief Steals the Podcast.
Where I steal the podcast.
And I steal it back.
Okie dokies. Today we are talking about Leverage, Season 5, Episode 7, The Real Fake Car Job. Beth, what did you think?
But you know, I have some mixed opinions about this episode, actually. Mm-hmm. I think, don't get me wrong, overall, I think it's a fine episode of Leverage. Like, mm-hmm. I think it ticks the, you know, the boxes. I don't think it does anything particularly special.
Look, where it's really special is it has the incomparable Matthew Illiard as the villain this week.
Yes.
And he's just kind of a dumb dickhead. And I love that choice for him. I think he should just get to be a dumb dickhead. Like, that's fine.
It's like evil Shaggy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because here's the thing. I actually think, as much as I do really like Matthew Illiard as an actor, I think that he's actually very, very talented and very good at what he does.
Yeah.
And I was very excited because you told me that we were going to get him as a villain. And I was like, oh, that's really fun. I feel like he plays a really fun villain, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I honestly am a little bit disappointed that this is the villain that he got because I don't like that he's just kind of a fucking idiot. Like, I've gotten quite used to Leverage having a certain standard mm-hmm. for the competency of their villains. And it's something that I really enjoy about the show because I like it to feel like the team is up against a real challenge yeah. in their opponent, right? Not just like the surrounding circumstance, but like in the actual person they're up against. I think that it's one of the key tenets of a really good episode of Leverage is that Nate has a counterpart
mm-hmm.
who yeah. is also like a mastermind who's kind of overseeing the whole thing. And like he has a really good sort of adversary, I suppose, to really yeah. test himself against. And in this one, it's kind of like, he's an asshole. Well, they are all assholes, but this one's kind of an asshole who's just kind of a bumbling idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I actually think that my favorite sort of antagonistic character in this episode is the head of the mob.
Mm. I will say, though, I do love the Bloody Marshal as a sort of antagonist in this episode as well. Because I think just the plot reveal of, like, yeah, she's actually also, like, she's not just out here trying to do her job. Like, she is... She's someone who is actively enabling this man to get away with what he's getting away with.
Yeah.
So I really enjoyed the reveal of, oh, the Marshal's actually like full on in on it. Like,
I will admit that actually took me by surprise. I didn't expect that the Marshal was going to be in on, you know, mm-hmm. his sort of corruption, but I'm glad that that is the case for a different reason to you. I'm glad because the whole episode, I was like, this woman is not very good at her job. I was like, I kind of hate that they're portraying her as this, like, incompetent sort of person. And, like, I understand that he is, like, bucking against her instructions at every which turn. But, like, mm-hmm. she ultimately has control here. And so I was like, or at least, you know, you're under the impression that she should, yeah. as his handler, have ultimate control because it's literally her job to have control. And I was like, I feel like she's really fumbling the bag. And I was like, I was frustrated because I was like, I don't love to see, like, super incompetent female characters. Mm. And so, for me, I was like, and we don't usually get it out of Leverage either.
No.
And so I was like, oh, this just isn't hitting right. I feel like they're doing this character an injustice by just sort of, like, letting her be constantly, like, talked down to and bamboozled by this guy. And I understand that, like, you know, he's the mark. And so one of the, like, key ways that they flag a mark for us is by making them like a misogynist.
It's making usually a dick to women.
Yeah, like, it's usually a solid indicator of like, hey, we don't like this guy.
And you're not meant to like this dude.
Exactly. And so I'm like, okay, yeah, no, I get it. But I felt like she was just lightly incompetent, especially the way they show her like watching the team. Like, yeah. Oh my God, the scene where fucking Sophie and Elliot, who are an iconic duo this episode, by yes. the way.
Uh-huh. Every moment they're on my screen this episode, I'm like, yes, this obsessed is exactly what them. Leverage should be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Loved it. But and also I love, because we don't usually see Elliot and Sophie specifically mm-hmm. pair up like that. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, this is a breath of fresh air. I really enjoy it. But the moment where Elliot is like digging the hole and like she's watching them from like the background in the yeah. bushes, I was like, this is so like... The lack of tactical skill is laughable. Mm. Like, I was watching her in the background, like, bobbing up and down, and I was like, this is comedic. Like, this is not like, oh, she's watching them from the bushes, and it's kind of like, ooh, you know, like, long lens, you know, camera used to spy on them from a distance. It's like, this woman is literally crouching in a bush and thinks they don't know she's there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is, like, come on. Like... Just give her a little bit of common sense, make her feel competent, because also she is supposed to be a marshal.
And like, marshals, generally speaking, are normally framed as at least semi-competent in leverage.
Yeah, and, like, given the fact that, like, yes, she's clearly corrupt, mm-hmm. you know, but the fact that she got to that level in the first place cannot have purely been through corruption. Or at least I would assume that. Like, I would assume she has to at least, you know, show some competency in her skills to be assigned a particularly, like, high-risk case as well, mm-hmm. you know. And it just seems insane to me that this is kind of like the betrayal she gets.
Mm. But what I will say is I do think some of it does tie back to the fact that she is corrupt. Like, mm. it's a lot harder to explain yourself and why you're worried that you're, you know, the person who you're protecting and witness protection is hiring hitmen to kill you if you don't mention the bit about, oh, well, also I'm super duper corrupt. And yeah. like, you know.
Yeah, it all plays into itself.
It like, all plays I'll into itself.
I'll give you that. I'll give but, you yeah. that. But, like, I also just think that she doesn't ever seem to have any kind of semblance of control
mm-hmm.
over any part of the situation. And so I feel like not only was it frustrating to watch Matthew Ilyard's character be kind of a bumbling idiot, it was also frustrating to watch the Marshal be kind of a bumbling idiot. And I was like, these two people normally, like, these characters would be portrayed as, like, having at least a certain amount of control, a certain amount of, like, influence or knowledge, like, over, you know, the team in some regard. And in this instance, I'm like, it's just, like, one weird and sort of silly decision after another. And I'm like, I understand, like, it's just different to what it normally yeah. is. But, like, I've come to expect a certain standard out of our criminals, you know? And I think that's why, like, the conversation at the end between Nate and the mob guy, whose name I can't remember for my life.
Yeah. Broncato, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Like, the conversation that they're having at the end, I think is really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, where Nate is right. being recognized as an equal, as an adversary, as someone he does not want on his bad side. And Nate is able to use that to be like, okay, well, like, let's reach a happy medium, you know? And I like that
there is... Like, you don't need him dead. You just need him quiet.
Yeah. And I like that Nate is able to, like, have a reasonable discussion with this person. I like that they're able to meet on equal footing and be like, okay, here is my objective. Here is my objective. Let's find a nice middle ground where we're both satisfied with the outcome. You know, I like that there was no petty bickering over, like, well, I want some of the 50 million. I like that you have that level of professionalism where he goes, I don't want any part of the money. That was never my drive.
It's also just interesting that they do frame the mob in this way. Because, like, they haven't hesitated in the past to frame the mob as the bad guy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, mobsters are criminals and I'm assuming they do things that hurt people. But, mm-hmm. you know, it is interesting.
So does the team.
Yeah. It is interesting to see, oh, hey, no, we have enough mutual respect. Like, you're not out here just hurting people willy-nilly for no
yeah.
purpose. And therefore, there's no reason for us to go after you because you're not going after innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at the end of the day, you do function as a regulatory sort of
system.
And despite the fact you are hurting people, like, I'm not going against you because you're not actually actively trying to hurt people who can't defend themselves.
Yeah, look, it's a really complicated kind of gray area in that particular like realm. I don't think that we are given enough information about, like, what they are actually doing to have, like, a really nuanced take on, like, the morality of it. But I do think it is an interesting piece of, like, comparative literature, essentially, to have those two characters sitting down and having that discussion and have them both acknowledge each other as equals and acknowledge that they would not want any kind of yeah. adversary, you know, situation
yeah.
between the two of them because they are both so influential and so good at what they do. Like, both of them are like, wow, I really respect what you've achieved here. I would not want you on my bad side. Mm-hmm. And it's a mutual two-way street kind of scenario where they're
saying that. And then Nate's saying, I'm not going to make you a target because... Mm-hmm. Also, the other thing is the mob is already... Like, they are legally breaking the law. So the police are already trying to bring them down. Like, there's no point... Nate trying to jump on the bandwagon to go against the mob.
Mm.
The mob is already...
They're known to the authorities. Yeah.
They're breaking the law. They're not getting away with their crimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if they are getting away with their crimes, the crimes are still being noticed and catalogued.
Yeah.
Whereas Nate goes after people who...
Are falling through the cracks.
Who are committing atrocities against other human beings, but they're doing it legally, so the law doesn't care, the government doesn't care. It's fine. They've mm-hmm. got enough money to get away with it.
Yeah.
The mob does not fall into that category.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like I said, it's very complicated, but I really, really appreciated that discussion at the end. And I appreciated the acknowledgement of yeah. each other in like a, oh, we are equals here. Like, mm-hmm. it's almost like a professional courtesy of like, yeah. wow, I really like, I'm inspired by what you've achieved, you know, kind of thing. It's almost like they're at a conference and they're like, oh, I read your paper on XYZ and I thought it was fascinating, you know, like, I think it's really interesting the way that they've kind of framed it. The only comparison I can sort of think of is sitting Nate down with Sterling.
Yeah.
And even that I think is...
is different again, because they have a different level of respect for each other.
They're competitive.
Yeah.
Whereas this is not competitive. This is just a mutual, like, respectful understanding. And so it's... yeah, I thought it was really interesting from that sort of, you know, frame of mind. What I really want to talk about, though, speaking of, like, having money, the way that Nate... tries to convince us, or, you know, the way that the writers are trying to convince the audience that this man has managed to rack up $150,000 over the span of 10 months by running petty scabbing crimes like making people pay $5 for Wi-Fi. That is insane. Like, that's... no. No. Like, I'm sorry. Like, let's do some very quick maths here. So let's say... 30 days to a month, just as like an average, right?
Yep.
10 months.
I'll accept that math.
30 by 10, we're looking at 300 days, roughly. Okay, give or take a couple of days here or there, depending on which month we're talking about. And then let's divide that by, say, 10 people use the Wi-Fi every day.
Okay. Like, I would go about calculating this a different way. So I would rather go, what target does he have to meet every day to accumulate $150,000?
Okay.
So we've got 300 days. So 150,000 divided by 300 days.
Uh-huh.
How many days is that? By how much money does that per day?
500.
So he has to be scamming 100 people per day.
Yeah.
To get that amount of money. And that's saying that he works 7 days a week. I'm assuming he's only working like five days a week. I'm assuming
he's only working part-time as well. So what, like let's say... 3 days in a week, not mm-hmm. necessarily full days either.
Yeah.
Because it's a bookstore. And yeah. like, let's be real, how much foot traffic are you getting? And not everyone is going to be using the Wi-Fi.
No.
And also, if I walked into a store and there was a sign that said $5 for the Wi-Fi password, I'd be like, I will simply use my data or I will go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That is ridiculous. If I'm already going in and I'm spending money, like, I'm sorry. If you're offering Wi-Fi, it should be free.
Yeah.
Like... no, I'm not paying additional. I'm not paying additional for your Wi-Fi. Like, no. So that is an absurd. And like, Nate does say, he's like, oh, you know, like he must be running like a half a dozen or a dozen schemes of this nature. And it's like, how? Like,
and also how? The thing is, we do know that he has been moved. So yeah. he has had his identity compromised. So like maybe some of his previous scams were worth like $10 a pop, not $5.
Yeah.
Then he's only having to scam 50 people a day, not 100.
But that's still so many people.
It's still so many people. And it's like, that is assuming that he's doing it every day and that it's not like there's no time, like, you know.
And
like,
also that he's not spending any of it on anything else.
Yeah.
Like, because I would assume, like, you know, if he has a little bit of extra cash that the government's not watching and he's clearly, like, very sort of disrespectful of, like, the conditions of his, you know, predicament.
Witness protection.
Like, I can imagine him going out on a weekend, you know, having a bit of a good time. That's not cheap.
Mm.
He's not going to be doing that using card transactions the government can watch. He'll use the cash they don't know about.
Also, the other thing is I'm also assuming that none of that comes from his actual salary to work at the bookstore or anything like that.
Yeah, I'm assuming
that's getting paid into a government-controlled account.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only reason they're allowing him to work is so that while he's in witness protection, he has the appearance of being a normal human being. So there are less questions raised of like, oh, well... you know, the next door neighbor just doesn't work, but is still living in a nice house, or you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm assuming the only reason they're permitting him to work is to make it look like he's a normal person with a normal job.
I just realized that, like, what you just described of, like, you know, you need to give the neighbors a reason to, like, think that he could realistically have a home sort of thing, like, in that neighborhood or whatever, is, like, literally the, like, fanfic thing or, like, the Christmas Hallmark movie thing of, like, oh, I'm a small town baker or I run a Christmas tree farm and here's my multi-million dollar mansion that I live in. No, I don't have inherited wealth. Like, this is just what do you get when you're a small town baker? Like,
you know what I mean? Like, I'm just assuming they're doing it for like the optics, basically, of, you know, this person is, you know, they're not, they're a regular, normal human being, not in witness protection at all, not even a little bit. Like,
here's the thing, I'm more than willing to suspend my belief when I'm reading a fic, and it's like, Cass is a struggling florist, but he still manages to live in his own apartment that he pays for by himself. You know, like, I'm willing to suspend my disbelief. Sure.
One day we'll get a fic where he lives with 18 different roommates, like...
Just like the host of angels that we get across the show, and they're all just in one big share house. I had a Sims game like that, actually. I just realized this. Wow, what a repressed memory. I literally, once I had the Sims, I had it on my old school laptop, and I could only run it if the battery was removed from the laptop and it was just straight up plugged into the wall. And I had to have it on a grate so that it didn't overheat and shut itself down. But I deleted every single house in the town, and I made the homes for, like, a bunch of different fictional characters, and I created all of the characters. Like, I had, like, Sam and Dean and Bobby, and I think I actually had just Sam and Dean living with Bobby, and I had, like, Cass and, like, a bunch of the angels and Chuck and, like...
Sometimes your addiction just really pops off, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, I...
Like, just say you're mentally ill and leave.
I was gonna say, I like to hyperfixate on things. Either I'm super focused or I'm not focused at all, and there is no in-between. But yes, no, so I thought it was very funny that they were trying to, like, put, like, this weird twist of, like, yeah, he has $100,000 cash, $150,000 cash. I'm like, yeah, okay, fucking sure. Sure he does.
Like, sure, buddy.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it would have been more believable if they'd said he'd spent more time in witness protection. If they'd said, oh, he's been in witness protection for, like, 3 years while, like, then it makes sense for him to have, you know, because that's money that he's getting... that the marshal does not know about, presumably. Mm-hmm. So he might just be, you know, getting $50 a day and stashing it. And if he had been in witness protection for, like, a year or two, or 3 years, that would make sense. And, like, the thing is, trials can go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they can go on forever. And then it would also make sense a lot of the dumb decisions that him and the marshal make, because at that point they've been dealing with each other for 3 fucking years and they're just kind of getting sick of it.
Yeah.
And, like, nothing's happened so far, so there's that false sense of security and, like...
Do you know what is wild? Like, it just occurred to me how many taxpayer dollars would be utilized to protect this man. And, like, how blatantly he is just disrespecting the whole system of, like...
That's currently keeping him alive. Because, as we found out, if the mob knows where he is...
They will come for him.
Like, they're not going to leave him alive. He's a liability.
It's not an empty threat by any means. Also, I realised I forgot to mention one of the things that actually really frustrated me about the marshal in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I said that she was incompetent and then didn't really elaborate on it other than her, like, poorly hiding in the bushes. The thing that really struck me as I was like, this woman is not good at her job, regardless of the context, right? Is when Nate, like, accosts her at the car show that they kind of orchestrate. And he's, like, clearly just trying to, like, distract her. Like, it's a very common tactic that he uses where he just gets in their faces and he's kind of annoying and, like, tries to pull them off course. We see it happen all the time. There are so many ways that people can get out of these scenarios, or, like, you know, even if, like, Nate ultimately achieves his goal of distracting them so that they lose whoever they were trying to follow or whatever, like, there are still ways that you can get out of that situation where it is still socially appropriate and you haven't assaulted anyone.
Yeah.
And she straight up, and I am not being hyperbolic here, goes for his throat. She grabs his fucking throat and pushes him up. If there was a wall, he'd be against it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like...
And then we'd be calling Dean and Cass.
Yeah. You know? And it's like, this is... You are in a very public space, full and grabbing another adult by the throat. Like, people are going to look at you, like, and be like, what is happening? Like, what a way to draw attention. What a way to ensure that you have eyes on you. Because the thing is, it's not just... the fucking idiot who you're supposed to be, like, worrying about being spotted and being thought of as suspicious in this area. You, the person who is always seen with him, also needs to not be super fucking suspicious. And it's just like, what are you doing? And it, for me, it was just really frustrating because I was just like, they're just depicting this person as just, like, not only, like, kind of bad at their job, but also just, like, a little stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I think it's kind of what boils down to is, like, both the marshal and the mark are just kind of stupid.
Yeah.
And, like, if that was the intent, then, like, it worked. you know, because it comes across that way. But I feel like I'm just so used to Leverage, like, not falling into that kind of trope of it being like, oh, the ditzy villain.
Yeah. And I think the thing is, it would make sense if they had been in witness protection for longer, because it's like, at this point, she's at her wit's end. She's waiting for her payout. Like, he's been promising her for ages and ages and ages, but the trial keeps on dragging out.
To be fair, and, like, 10 months is a significant amount of time, but it's for
someone who's meant to be highly trained
and professional and, like, you know, it just seems whack.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have so many notes here that are just like, why is she doing that? She is not subtle. Like, there are ways you couldn't have gotten around this, like, without resorting to violence. Like, or notes where I'm just like, this lady is literally insane, or...
What I will say, though, is despite the fact the Marshall's a little bit dumb this week, we do get god-tier fucking Sophie and Elliot pretending to be the hitmen, and just something about their vibe and their dynamic and the way that Sophie's like... So, like, do you have any other tips from when you were, you know, like, murdering people? Like, babe, you're not subtle. Like,
do you know what was so funny? Is I actually kind of didn't like that, because I thought that it was her, like, being kind of insensitive when we know that Elliot is, like, particularly, like, whatever about
this. Like, that's the thing I'm sensitive about.
Exactly. But then I was like, oh, no, she's playing up the thing because she knows the Marshall is watching them.
Yeah.
So, like, she's doing the, like, across her throat and, like, if the Marshall's lip reading, like, so... You know, or taking, like, video or whatever with long distance. It's like, okay, so it's not actually her being kind of dismissive of Elliot. Yeah. It's actually her playing into the part they're trying to...
And I also think that it's also a way for her to tell Elliot, like, she doesn't care about his past.
Yeah, it's very chill.
Like, if she's very chill, if she's very flippant about it, if she's very much, like, kind of making a little bit of a, like, joke out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's a way to reassure Elliot of, like...
I'm not going to judge.
I don't judge. It's fine. Like,
we're all criminals here.
Yeah, we're all criminals here. And then we get the iconic scene of Sophie being like they're digging the grave, or Elliot's digging the grave, which real Supernatural quoted of them.
Yeah, I was thinking.
Elliot digging the grave. Sophie's just standing there watching, being the queen that she is. And he's like, the first thing that would find you out here is the coyotes. Like,
I know. I love that
like,
bit.
And she's like... Well, now I'm scared. He's like, why? I'm here. She's like, you're the thing that's fucking scaring me. Like, you're just telling me that if you murdered me here, like, it would be fine. Like, I'd get eaten by coyotes before anyone found me. Like,
yeah. No, I love their dynamic. I think it's really funny. And, like, not to bring it back to The Sims again, but I think it's hilarious having Sophie and Elliot showing up with the cake and, like, that whole bit.
Whether McElroy.
So fucking funny. It reminded me of, like, when you move into your house and The Sims and, like, all the neighbors come to visit you and you're like, kind of like, go away. I didn't ask for this. I don't want to socialize with you. I'll go find you later when I'm, like, you know, ready to play. But it was so funny. Like, them coming to the door and just being so fucking upfront and, like, they're giving... Melbourne arty hipster.
They're giving pod people for me.
Wait, sorry, they're giving what?
Pod people.
What's a pod person?
I don't know how... Okay, so a pod person is like kind of culty.
Okay.
Kind of like they've been brainwashed and put in a pod. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't think pod people's a common expression.
Yeah, I don't think... I was like, do you mean, like, our friends? Because I feel like maybe you're like wrong in that
squad.
Assessment.
They're like the pod squad.
It's like, oh my god, there's so much, like, Beth and Hannah. Like,
yeah, obviously. No, I mean just, like, a little, like, culty, a little, like, brainwashy, a little bit, like science fiction cult being put in a pod.
They
forcefully
were dressed as though they were from The Matrix.
Yeah.
So I understand the science fiction. And, like, the art, like, I'm a theatre kid kind of energy is why I said Melbourne.
Yeah. But, I love how you're Melbourne. Just, like, accusing Melbourneans of being pod people. Like,
look, I'm not saying they're pod people. I'm saying they revel in their artistic expression and enjoy things such as deconstructed coffee.
Okay, no, I am actually pulling. I was like, I will Google this to see if I'm pulling pod people from nowhere. I'm not. There's a movie called Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and when the people have been like possessed by like the aliens or whatever, they're called pod people.
Oh, like a hive mind.
Yeah.
Oh, do you know what? Actually, they are kind of giving hive mind energy.
Yeah.
It's something about their speech pattern and like the way they're presenting, and they're very intense. Yeah.
Like the intensity and the way that it's like, I'm Franny McElroy, this is my husband, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what security system are you using? Like,
do you know what it's kind of giving? It's kind of giving like...
They're a serving cunt.
It's kind of giving M. Night...
Shyamalan?
Yes. I can never fucking think of how to pronounce his name, but yes. And, like, that kind of, like, very eerie horror style of, like, it's just, like, Uncanny Valley. Like, it's just a bit off, you know? And what I particularly loved about that scene mm-hmm. was when the marshal is closing the door in Sophie's face, and like something about the delivery of her last line as she kind of shouts it through the door.
We just want to welcome you to the neighborhood.
Oh, it's so funny.
Okay, and I've gotten the actual actual definition of pod people from the Collins Dictionary.
Oh my god, educate me.
Noun, word forms plural pod people informal. A person who behaves in a strange, especially mechanical way as if not fully human.
Oh, so Cascor.
Cass is a pod person confirmed.
Cass is from Melbourne confirmed. Sorry, I'm being really mean to people from Victoria.
Pod people, that's exactly, like, I was correct.
Okay, because when you first said it, I had, like, a couple of initial thoughts. Number one, like, podcasters, and I was like, seems white. Then I was like, number two, pod as in the snack. And I was like, just someone who really likes pods? Like, okay.
Your Australian's choice. Really popping out this week.
It really is. Like, I pods are great and whatever, but, like, they're not my first choice in snack.
I wonder if they have pods in America.
I don't think they do. I feel like they're a specifically Australian thing. That's right, they can Google it if they're interested. They're delicious, but they're kind of, I find the biscuit bit kind of dry, personally.
I like that the biscuit bit's dry, because it means really? It's crunchy.
Okay, see, I love a good crunch, but the problem is that I also find it kind of bland. Like, it's almost like it's almost like Milo cereal.
Mm.
It's like Milo cereal with chocolate in it, which is good.
I like Milo cereal, but so I don't, some cereals I can eat dry, Milo cereal is not one of them.
Really? I can eat Milo cereal dry.
But you think pods are too dry?
Well, yeah.
But you eat it with, like, the caramel and stuff, so it's not dry.
I guess. But I also feel like the chocolate is not that great.
Which version of pods do you like, though?
Okay, I have only ever really had, like, the original or, like, the Mars Bar collaboration one. Okay.
The Mars Bar pods are the best.
Yeah. I think. Well, they're the ones that you see at, like, the cinema and stuff, mm-hmm. so, like... What is this conversation? I'm so sorry. I'm dissing Victoria and we're talking about snacks that most people who listen to this don't have access to. So look, this is just one of those episodes today. And the other one was I thought about like pod coffee.
Yeah.
Which is what made me think of like Melbourne.
Okay.
Because coffee. But I was like, but they feel like the Melbourne stereotype. Pod coffee is
not snobby enough for me to give Melbourne.
True. This is the thing. Like, because every country has its stereotypes about its states. You know, the stereotype that Melbourne gets is, like, art, hipster, snob.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's kind of it. And I'm not saying that it's true. I'm just saying it's the stereotype the state has been assigned. Mm-hmm. And so that is the vibe that I got. I was like, oh, yeah, they're like... But I think that this particular rendition of Elliot and Sophie, like, vibing is one of my favourites that we've seen. Like, mm-hmm. the scene where they're putting the fucking axes into the boot, and Sophie's like, do you think this is suspicious enough? I'm like, I love to see it. I love to see it, because it's like, you're holding giant axes, plastic bags, and rubber gloves. I think that's suspicious.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, babe, I think maybe mm-hmm. the court marshal, whoever marshal, is, like, watching you.
U.S. marshal.
U.S., that's the word.
Yeah.
Or, not word, you know what I mean.
Abbreviation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the person who you want to think, like, that you're being suspicious definitely fucking thinks you're being suspicious. Don't you worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's very funny. It was giving... Did you ever watch the Santa Clarita Diet?
I wanted to watch it, but I never did.
It's really good. I highly recommend it. It's a real bummer that they got cancelled because I was very excited to see where they were going to go with the plot. So, at Netflix, maybe you should have thought about that one. But... genuinely very funny, very fun, and it was sort of giving the same energy of like, is this suspicious? And it's like, I don't know, babe, maybe have a fucking think about it for 30 seconds. I think yes. I think the answer is definitely yes. Oh, and also, mm-hmm. when Sophie says they always throw away the cake, but they keep the tray, why is everyone throwing away cakes?
I think it's like, sometimes, like, if you've never met the person before, do you really want to eat a cake baked by someone you don't actually know?
I mean, okay, to be fair, the way that Elliot and Sophie presented it, yeah, I might not eat that cake. Because they seem like maybe they're into some, you know, extracurricular substances, and I would want to not unknowingly consume that. But I think generally, you know, I've made cookies and biscuits and stuff for people who've moved in across the street. Don't look at me like that. We used to make gingerbread every year for all of our neighbours, and we would go around and we hand out all the gingerbread. That's why I do it every year and bring it to, like, my co-workers and stuff.
Why are you acting like a 40-year-old woman?
Because I am, spiritually. No, like, genuinely, Or even my workplace. Like, everyone brings cakes and
stuff. Yeah, but you know the people in your workplace.
I mean, yeah. But, like, you don't know people at the farmer's market and you'll still buy stuff from them.
Because
what's the difference?
If you get sick from something you bought at the farmer's market, presumably you could go back to the farmer's market and track down what went wrong with the food that you bought from the farmer's market, a place where you do, in fact, buy food from and is historically normally okay because it is a farmer's market where people are going to the farmer's market to specifically sell food.
I mean, maybe, but, like, I don't know, man.
I don't understand why you don't understand the difference between buying food at a farmer's market and...
Well, I just think it's a waste of cake. Well, like...
You're right, it's a waste of cake.
Why don't... Or if you know that they're just going to throw away the cake, then bring them a fucking pot plant, you know? Bring them something that's not ingestible. Problem solved, you know?
So throwing away a plant's better?
No, because they wouldn't throw away the plant. Why would you throw away a plant? I understand. Like, the reason for throwing away the cake you're giving me is that you don't want to eat it because you don't know how, like, the process with which it's been made, right? You don't know the contents or whatever. But you don't eat a plant. There's nothing wrong with having a plant in your house. Well, I don't. Maybe I'm just fucking friendlier than you. I don't know, Jamie. I'll bring people gifts.
You're like, I don't know if I'm... You are friendlier than me. We've established this in the many times you've been like, oh, yeah, I'd go and investigate if somebody was actively getting murdered. And I'm like, I don't want to get murdered.
Well, yeah, I don't want to get murdered either, but I also don't want them to get murdered.
But you're most likely going to get murdered. Like,
that's not true.
They're already murdered. It's fine.
I'll just do that thing where, like, you run and you make lots of noise so you scare off the predator, you know? Like a... Not a bear. That's the opposite with a bear. But, you know, like with a snake. You make lots of noise and they just don't come near you.
Absolutely unhinged behaviour.
Well, I don't know. You know, if I see someone lying on the ground in public, I check on him. I don't think that's insane, you know.
I feel like we need to appreciate Parker in that dress this week, though. She looks so cute. I love that dress, personally.
Yeah, I thought it was really cute, too. I liked her hat. Mm. I like a hat moment when it's not Nate. Who was also wearing a hat this week.
I feel like that's discrimination against Nate, though. Like, that feels really rude there, Beth.
That's all right. I can live with myself.
And I think that we really need to appreciate Hardison doing everything he can and absolutely serving as the artist this week.
Oh my God. Like,
he is really bringing that Melbourneian energy that you were looking for.
Do you know what's really funny is I very much, like, make fun of Nate for, like, obviously his accents and his dumb hats. Mm. And, you know, this has been a running joke since season one, like, very early on. What is really funny to me is that we've had, like, a very pointed sort of introduction to Hardison wanting to put himself in Nate's role.
Mm.
And I think that this is actually so funny when you look at it from that angle. Like, he's showed up in a silly hat and he's putting on an accent and his entire persona is, let me annoy the mark until they do what I want. Which is Nate's entire MO anytime he's interacting with Mark. We've talked about this over and over. And so I feel like it's so funny to see Hardison step into that role. And honestly, having Parker play Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that it is really interesting. And I think that... Actually, this is something that I want to talk about anyway. But and I talked about this last week. I've talked about it a lot. This season, if... I swear to God. If they do not end this season with Nate being like, I'm retiring from the life and I'm passing the baton kind of thing, I will eat a shoe. Like... It's just, there's, at this point, I feel like if they do anything else, it's going to be ingenuine. Because, like, they are setting it up so aggressively here. Like, even Elliot and Sophie are talking about, like, you know, life after the jobs and, like, retirement. And even, like, Parker and Hardison have a chat about it. And I actually want to talk about their discussion because I think it's interesting the way that it was presented. Like, I couldn't quite ascertain if they were genuine when they were saying that they weren't looking to sort of settle down, or if maybe there's a, like, a undercurrent of, like, actually maybe we want to take a step back for a while from those two. Like, I don't know, it just, there was an energy, I think, in the way that discussion played out that I think sort of suggests that maybe they're not being 100% truthful when they tell each other that they want to keep doing this forever. And I think that as characters, it would be really interesting, particularly for Parker, to commit to settling down somewhere and not necessarily being so, like, freewheeling, I guess, like, to have ties to a place or to a person, even. Like, her being with Hardison at all is a huge thing for her character. And so I wonder if that is going to be something that they maybe discuss again at a later day with a little bit more, like, a bit more of an in-depth look at how they're feeling about it.
I think this is more of like just a, like, personally, the way I've always interpreted this is less of a like, oh, well, maybe one of them genuinely wants to like stop and settle down, and more of a like a reminder for Hardison, like, if you think, like, you actually have to check in with Parker now. Like, just because you assume that Parker doesn't want to settle down, you still have to have these conversations. That's what it means to be in a big boy relationship with a fellow member on your crew. Like,
with someone that you respect.
Yes.
Because if you don't respect someone, you're not going to care what their opinion is on a decision you're making. Mm-hmm. But if you respect them, yeah, absolutely. You get their take.
Yeah. And so I think it's kind of like, it's just like a thing where it's like, Hardison kind of needed to be reminded that, you know, like, because he's chosen to commit to Parker, he's no longer in this alone. And we get a lot of reminders on the, like, the on the flip side of, like, Hardison reminding Parker that she's not alone. But he kind of, sometimes I feel like he almost forgets that it goes two ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Parker's no longer alone, but neither is he.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it is very interesting. And you're right, we do get a lot of it from the other side of things. And I think that that's probably just because, like, as characters, like, he is more comfortable typically with, like, voicing how he's feeling about things, making that, like, vulnerability is a lot more consistent from Hardison. But it definitely, I think, is sort of a case of, like, taking your own advice.
Yeah.
And, like, having the perspective of, like, oh, okay, like, maybe this is something that I need to consider as well and not just something that my partner needs to consider.
Mm.
So, yeah, no, I totally understand that perspective. It was just the way that the scene was kind of, like, the way that they shot it, I think, or edited it together, for me, sort of gave this undercurrent of, like, oh, this conversation isn't finished. Like, one way or another, I don't feel like this conversation is over. I think that it's probably something that will crop up again, or at least be relevant to a later discussion that they have or later choices that they make. And I have to assume that they're going to be relevant to the way the season ends, because we are getting close now.
We are getting close. I will say, for me, season 5 is one of those that doesn't feel like it's ending until it ends, if that makes sense. Like, the obviously, we don't have, like, a massive overarching plot this season. Like, we don't have, like, it's not like, you know, season 4, we have, like, the ticking time bomb of, like, they have to deal with Latimer. At some point, they have to deal with Latimer. They can't let him go unchecked. They have to deal with him at some point. Like, it's just, like, a matter of when. And, like, that ticking time clock sort of element of, like, at what point does it become unavoidable? At what point does it become,
there's a matter of urgency.
No other options. They have to deal with it. This season doesn't really have that. Like, they obviously have their overarching plot, but it, much like sort of the first season, it's a character-driven plot.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, there is an external pressure that they have to deal with at some point. It is an internal pressure. It is an internal friction. It is,
the call is coming from inside the house.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I think that the energy that I've gotten so far, and I've basically been saying this the whole season, the energy that I think they're presenting is Nate is ready to move on. And I think it's going to be really interesting. Like, it feels like a bird parent situation where he's like, he's ready to kick his kids out the nest and make sure they see them fly. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it sort of feels like he's ready to just sort of move forward with Sophie.
Mm-hmm.
And see where life takes them as a couple. And, like, they draw attention to that this episode as well. Like, at the beginning, sort of Sophie says, the trick is knowing when to leave the party sometime before you lose everything you showed up with, right? Like, that's the key. And Nate says, like, I showed up at the party empty-handed, but I found a pretty girl.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that that is, number one, like, a really lovely kind of analogy, I suppose, for the show.
Yeah.
Really is, like, you know, what they brought to the party and, like, what they're leaving with, I think is really interesting as, like, a concept.
And we also get the line from Nate this week about how it matters. Because Sophie said,
with or without me.
With or without me, that doesn't matter. What matters is that at some point you let go of the past and let yourself heal.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially. Like, that's paraphrasing, but that's essentially what she says. At some point you have to stop looking to the past so you can look to the future.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's with or without me, it doesn't matter. You just need to, at some point you need, if you ever want to find peace, you need to do this. And he says, it matters.
Yeah.
Whether it's with you or without you does matter to me. And I think that is a beautiful moment and something that really did actually need underscoring and highlighting. Mm-hmm. Because their relationship up to this point has been pretty tumultuous. It's been pretty, like, on again, off again, a little bit rocky. Like,
well, they've just been very blasé about actually acknowledging the importance of it. And so, yeah, you're right. It is really nice to have Nate actually be like, and I think that they're showing him actually be in love with Sophie in a way that is, like, real and tangible, and it doesn't feel like there's any imminent, like, oh, we're going to lose each other, or it's going to fall apart, or like someone's going to find out. Like, all of those things are gone now. And you're just kind of left with this, like we see him looking at her at the bar at the end of this episode. And it's just like that fondness, like it's such a warm feeling, you know, that you can sort of sense between the two of them, or you can sort of sense it when he's just looking at her. Like, he's looking at his future. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Like, he is now looking towards his future, and whether or not the rest of the team necessarily sees that yet or understands that yet,
what's important is that he is.
Yeah.
And that he's finally reached a place in his life where he is ready to move on from his past, which has been, like, his driving force as a character since episode one.
I think that one other, like, really interesting thing that we get from this episode is, I can't remember the quote. I thought I wrote it down, but as I'm scrolling through, I can't find it, so maybe I didn't. But when Nate is, like, sitting down with Sophie and she's like, really, that's the best you came up with? You could come up with? Like, he'd given an excuse for something. Mm. And I think that it is interesting because, like, he'd said something to Hardison.
Mm.
And basically Sophie's saying, like, really? Like, that's the best you could come up with. And it sort of implied to me that maybe Sophie knows what Nate's planning, or at least has, like, a better understanding. Like, because she's always been able to read him better than everyone else. And so it's maybe, like, she kind of has an inkling of what he has planned and is kind of not accepting his excuses in the way that the rest of the team might be more inclined to do. But I think she's also calling him out, like, really, that was your best fucking excuse. Like, you're supposed to be some mastermind and that's the shit you came up with. Like,
babe, I'll go and talk to Sterling.
But yeah, no. And I think, actually also this episode, we get Elliot talking about how he'd always dreamed of opening a restaurant, but now he's probably just going to get stuck making sure Hardison doesn't get closed down. But
what he doesn't understand is that's Hardison's love language. That's Hardison saying, you're part of my family, so I'm going to buy you a restaurant to run. Because, like, let's face it, the restaurant is not Hardison's. The restaurant is Elliot's. Like, Hardison basically bought it with the idea of, I'm going to get Elliot to run this one.
Yeah, he literally just, like, Elliot was, like, immediately mad about the menu and wanted to fix it himself. Yeah. Like,
he bought it with the knowledge
that
this is exactly what Elliot was going to do. He knew, like, when he bought the restaurant, when he opened up the, like, oh, well, like, can you fix this menu for me? Like, I don't think it's a stretch to say, like, Hardison knew.
Yeah, that's Hardison pulling a Sophie.
Like, that's Hardison pulling a Sophie. That's Hardison baby trapping him with a restaurant. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's him, like, being like, you know, you won't just accept me saying I love you like a normal fucking human being, so now you get a restaurant.
Yeah.
Like,
crazy. No one's doing it like Hardison. I feel like this episode, like, here's the thing. I've still got, like, half my fucking notes left. I think that there is a lot that I could just say about, like, little bits in this episode. Like, I like that Elliot's car makes a return. I thought it was weird that Parker was wearing a shirt that said I heart food carts. And I was like, okay, like, yeah, same, but that seems whack. Like, I don't remember her ever wearing, like, a t-shirt with a slogan on it before that wasn't somehow plot relevant. So, you know what I mean? Like, I was just like, that's whack. And I was like, maybe this is foreshadowing Elliot food truck that I've been dying for, like, this entire show, ever since we learned that Elliot could cook. But, you know, I was like, maybe that's that. But, like, also, you know, I assumed it was going to become, like, plot relevant at some point. Like, I thought we'd get a flashback to her, like, at some sort of vendor, you know, and it would be relevant to the episode. But no, she was just wearing it. You know, I could talk about how soap operas aren't embarrassing, Hardison. Shut the fuck up, you know? Or, you know, why did they green screen a street? You know, garbage is always best. Like, why are those perfectly fine undies in the bin? Like, there are so many things that I could just mention as just sort of off the cuff. But I think that the most interesting things we've probably already covered.
Mm.
Like, I think the most interesting things about this episode are the discussions that they all have about retirement and, like, the possibility of being civilians, of, like, looking towards the future. And also, I think the fact that this is maybe the first real time in any of their lives, you know, since being in this particular line of business, that they've had the stability to actually think about the future.
And to know that they realistically have the possibility that they could.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's like they're in a place at the moment where they know that if they wanted to be just civilians again, they could just take their money and leave.
Mm.
Like, there is no looking for the next score, the next payout. Like, they're not living, like, heist to heist. Like, at this point, they all have enough money that they could literally retire.
They, like, had that from the pilot. Yeah. Like, I honestly think that at this point, it's like, we've been working really hard for 5 years. We've mm-hmm. been putting in the time. We've been in so many dangerous situations. Like, I think it's just time for a little holiday.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I think that we should just go take a break. Like, you know when they went their separate ways in between seasons mm-hmm. to be, like, to, like, lay low or whatever the fuck?
Yeah.
I feel like maybe they just need to take a break to just...
Take a break.
Take a break. Like, not- I just... Literally, I realized the other day, I'm taking some leave over, like, Christmas, New Year's. Mm. Like, only for, like, 3 days. But, like, because of all the public holidays and the weekends and stuff, I sort of end up with, like, almost 2 weeks off, right? Which mm-hmm. is amazing.
Yeah.
And someone at work was asking, like, oh, when was the last time you took leave? And I realized the last time I took leave that wasn't for some kind of, like, oh, I have exam. To... It was exams or, like, illness. Or, like, I traveled for 1 day to see a concert, right? Mm. Other than that, the last time I took leave for any reason that wasn't illness or uni was when we went to France... In 2018, that's the last time I took leave.
Mm.
And so, like, I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready for a break. Because, like, even, you know, my days off, I'm doing this. So, you know, and, like, not this isn't a delight, but it does just mean that it's, like, there's no downtime. And, like, because of the way that, like, you know, the leverage group runs,
mm.
like, they don't get downtime.
Yeah.
And so... They don't have time to explore other avenues for themselves. Mm. They don't have time to see, like, if I was just a normal civilian,
yeah,
what like, might I enjoy? Because they
get time between jobs, but it's, like, either a couple of days or maybe, like, a 2 weeks at the most. Like, yeah. they're not just taking...
There's also the paranoia that comes mm. with the type of work that they do. Like, you can't just go and do anything because... Yeah. You might expose yourself. You can't just go to between, any part in the world.
Yeah, the time off between jobs is almost... work in itself because it's laying low, which is actively work. Like, it's not just...
Yeah, it's not relaxing.
No.
And so I think that it's certainly probably time for them. Like, I feel like I can imagine that if you were looking at these characters as realistic human beings, mm-hmm. they would be burnt the fuck out by now.
Yeah.
Because also, like, the work that they're doing is not, like... Not to say, like, office jobs aren't, you know, draining in their own right, but it's not like they're sitting in a cubicle
yeah.
doing paperwork. Like, they are in life-threatening situations... Yeah. On the fucking daily. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a high-stress, high-performance yeah. style work.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I think, honestly, that they just probably need a little vacay, you know? More
like R&R.
Yeah. And I feel like it makes sense for them to go and explore different avenues for themselves mm-hmm. at this point. They've all grown so much as characters. They've got the financial freedom, obviously. But also they've, like Elliot is no longer tied down by the fact that he has to lay low for Moreau, you yeah. know? And... Parker and Hardison are relatively young and, like, maybe wanting to look at, you know, their lives as a couple. Like, do they want to settle down somewhere? Maybe they do.
Mm.
You know, does Elliot want to actually run that restaurant? Does Sophie actually want to run that theater? Does Nate want to get into some kind of consulting work? You know,
yeah.
does he just want to fully retire
mm-hmm.
and just spend his time traveling the world with Sophie? Do they want yeah. to go back to where they first met?
And where, like, she first shot him.
Exactly. And, like, have, like, a romantic getaway because they haven't had that. Because yeah. their relationship, like you said before, has been so tumultuous. And there's always been things and stuff and people. And, you know, I think it would just be nice to let them all actually exhale
mm.
and just be.
Yeah.
You know? Sorry, that was, like, a really long time.
No, that's okay.
Maybe I'm projecting a bit here. But, like, I just feel like it would be nice for them mm-hmm. to have some time. To just not have any pressure, mm-hmm. to not have a deadline, to not have a, oh my God. Like, it's kind of like a Dean Winchester complex mm-hmm. of, like, I have to save everyone all the yeah. time. And it's like, sweetie baby, that might not actually be possible.
Yeah.
You might just have to lower your expectations of yourself just a smidge and let yourself relax, you know? And, like, I think that maybe that's the next sort of phase mm-hmm. of growth for them as people.
Yeah.
Is just allowing themselves to chill and mm-hmm. to not feel the weight of the world on them at all times and feel like they have to fix every single corrupt problem yeah. all the time, you know?
All right. Oh, I don't think I have anything else to add about this episode. Do you have anything else you'd like to add?
Only very briefly that mm-hmm. I don't understand the appeal of private collections.
Mm. I just don't understand the appeal of old cars.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
personally, I'm not an old car kind of girly. Like,
I'm not a vehicular,
mm-hmm.
like, I don't care. I'm like, I love my car. It gets me from A to B.
Mm-hmm.
That's
the extent of my interest in vehicles.
Exactly. And so, but for me, I'm just like, if I had something that I thought was really cool, like, I would want to share it. Mm. I'd like, just keeping it sort of in my house just seems whack.
Mm.
You know? Like, put that shit in a museum or yeah. a gallery or, like, something. You know? It just seems And this is no shade. It's just, like, for me, like, I don't understand. Like, if I had something that I thought was amazing and I was really passionate about it, I would be like, well, I want to share that.
Yeah.
And if I have it just in my home, like, who am I sharing it with?
It's like, okay, I get to look at it whenever I want, but, like...
Big whoop. Like, I want other people to be able to see it and understand why I love it so much. Yeah. You know? Like, I just, I don't understand the, like, appeal. And, like, I suppose taking, you know, your vehicles to stuff like classic car shows, like, I guess that is kind of, like, what I'm getting at. But... Yeah. I don't know. It just feels sort of exclusive in a way. Yeah. I don't know. It just, I've never understood the appeal. It's like people having, like, buying Van Goghs for their home.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wouldn't it maybe be appreciated more in an art gallery? Do you know what I mean? I don't know. That's just my take.
But no, people spending wild amounts of money on cars is wild to me.
Yeah, I just don't understand the appeal. I mean, I guess if it's your thing.
Anyway, I think if that's all you wanted to say, if you've got nothing else to add.
I've got stuff I can add. I just don't think it's that interesting.
Okay.
Like, it's just like little piddly...
Yeah. It's a fun episode. I like it, but it's not really that interesting or important. Like, it's just a fun little episode. It's got the vibes.
I just don't
think... It's a fun little time. We got, like, some nice interactions between the team, but there's just nothing really interesting happening here.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, like, as an episode, I think that what they were trying to do with, like, the overarching plot is obviously, like, important. Yeah. And it fits right in with, like, shit that I've been saying this whole season. So I'm like, cool, like, that's validating. But I'm also like, okay, I personally think that the themes that you were going with was already, like, pretty on the nose obvious. I feel like we didn't need it spoon fed to us.
Yeah.
And also considering that the episode surrounding it, I didn't think was actually that engaging. So, like, the point of this episode is to highlight this idea of moving on and retirement and what it's like to be a civilian. Like, I understand that that's the point of this episode. I just feel like it wasn't necessarily needed to be that explicit because I think they've not been that subtle about it thus far. And it also just, I think, suffers from the fact that the plot around it was just not really that engaging. And they also had Matthew Illiard. And honestly, I feel like I'm kind of disappointed that this is the role that he played. Like, I was so excited. Like, I was, like, ready to see him be this villain, you know?
Yeah.
And he just kind of wasn't. And I was like, man, that's a bummer. Like, you had this actor and you just kind of wasted his potential. And I was, you know, I don't know. That's just me. Not that I think he did a bad job. I just think that he could have been given a much more interesting character to play.
Yeah.
But
anyway, how would you rate The Real Fake Car Job out of 5?
Look, I think honestly I'm going to, this might be a bit harsh, but I think I'm going to give it a 2.5. I just, like,
you're so mean.
I could be swayed to a 3, but I just don't think it was doing anything particularly interesting or special. The only thing that I watched in this episode where I was like, oh, this is interesting, is the conversation at the end with Nate and the mob guy, and maybe the scene with Sophie where he's like, it matters. I think outside of that, like, there was some fun stuff.
Yeah.
But there was just nothing that, like, I don't think it's a very memorable episode.
Yeah.
And I think that the stuff that they were, like, trying to highlight, I was like, I feel like you're assuming the audience is a bit thick to have not already picked up on
this. I think they're assuming the audience is a casual viewer who, like, isn't
paying attention. Okay. Like, yeah, and that's valid. That's valid. That's actually just a... That's a difference in terms of, like, how I...
How we are currently consuming the media.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Versus how it was originally designed to be consumed. Yeah. So that is honestly probably just based in the bias of, like, how we are currently consuming it rather than its intended design. And also, they're not expecting people to sit down and have an hour-long conversation about each episode every week. So, like, sure. But for me, like, as my experience, like, in my subjective rating, I feel like it's, like, they're bashing me over the head with it now. I'm like, okay. Like, I thought it was an interesting, subtle, like, decision you were making at the beginning of the season. And now I'm like, we get it. You know, it's kind of like in Supernatural where they brought up, like, oh my God, Dean is Michael, Sam is Lucifer, like, 12 times. And it's like, the first 2 times it was like, oh, that's really interesting. But then the next 10, it was like, yeah, we get it. You've already told us this. You know what I mean? Kind of like Nate and the, like, thief versus nice, normal civilian guy thing, or like Nate and his drinking thing, where I was like, I get it. You're doing it too much now.
Yeah.
Kind of like me talking right now, actually.
That's okay. The next episode is one I am really excited for you to see. It's called The Broken Wing Job. What do you think it's about?
Oh, okay. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is like a bird with a broken wing, but I'm going to assume that that's probably too literal of a take. So
you're thinking something more metaphorical?
Yeah. So, I mean, my next thought would be like a plane, but we've just had the DB Cooper job. So
they like giving us planes though.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of planes and airports.
So, like, maybe it's going to be something to do with, like, maybe not necessarily, like, a plane, but maybe, like, some sort of, like, air travel or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe it is going to be something to do with a bird. You know, who fucking knows? Maybe it's about some sort of endangered species moment. I don't know. The other thing is it could be, like, a metaphor for, like, incapacitation. Like, it could be, like, sort of like in the, was the homecoming job in season one where it was, like, the army vets who were in, like, physiotherapy and stuff, like, as sort of, like, they'd been incapacitated by their time in conflict and then they were being, like, ripped off. Like, maybe it's making that sort of vein, but, like, that's, I don't know, like, it's, I'm going from the very literal interpretation to, like, kind of an abstract interpretation, but I'm assuming it's got something to do with, like, something being an incapacitation in some regard, whether that is in terms of machinery or in terms of a person or in terms of an animal. Like, I think that there's going to be some kind of harm done to a relatively innocent party, which, as I say it out loud, is literally every episode of Leverage. So, I don't know.
Really, it could be on the broken element of it.
Well, I, you think of, like, a bird with a broken wing. Like,
it is called the broken wing job.
Exactly. And so it's kind of like, or a bird with a broken wing is kind of fucked. Do you know what I mean? And it, like, it becomes a very vulnerable, very, like, because wings are primarily, like, they're a way for them to avoid their predators. So they can fly away. And so, like, if you break the bird's wing, it is literally stranded. So, like, even then, like, maybe they're stranded somewhere. Maybe it's, like, they got stuck on a desert island. I don't fucking know. You know, like, it could be a million things. It could always be a million things.
Always. Well, thank you so much for listening today. If you want to join us again next week for the Broken Wing Job, I would be so excited. I am very excited for Beth to see this one. You can talk to us about literally anything you want. You can find us on all sorts of social media platforms. But we do suggest coming and talking to us about, oh, I want to know. So at the end of the episode, Nate says something along the lines to Hardison of, like, Hardison says, oh, there are five impossible things to guess there. What did you know? I want to know which three things you reckon, like, Nate knew. Like, because I've got my theories about which ones he knew and which ones he didn't.
What's your theory?
We're wrapping up here.
Well, this is an interesting thing we could have talked about, Jamie. I waffled on about Melbourne for 10 minutes.
Well, maybe if you didn't waffle on about Melbourne for 10 minutes, we would have had time for this.
All right, well, I guess you have to message Jamie to find out. I guess I'll have to message Jamie to find out.
But I personally think he knew that he would probably screw up and let the mob know where he was because of the car. I think he also knew that the marshal had probably turned on the GPS or something along those lines on his phone because of his constant outings. And I can't remember the other one.
I can't even remember the five things he listed, so
but
you're doing better than
those, those are two of the five that I reckon he knew.
Okay, and I think it would be really interesting to, like, if you were the kind of person who watched Leverage as it came out, I am fascinated to know, did you find this, like, theme too in your face? Or was it less so if you were watching a general audience, like, week to week with, like, you know, other shit happening in between?
Well, I personally binged it and I didn't think it was that strong at all.
Really?
Yeah, but
so that maybe it's just something that I just picked up on.
It might just be that, like, because I was binging it, all of the episodes together into one large chunk, and then it's like, oh, like, they're just, like, the over-themes rather than, like, oh, well, this episode mentioned it, but also this episode mentioned it. But also, you know, when you're binging, it's kind of like, head empty, no thoughts, I'm just consuming media right now.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'd be interested, like, does it feel like another sort of thing where they're just bashing you over the head with it and it's kind of like, yeah, okay, we get it? Or is it something that you thought was, like, really well-paced and, like, really, like, you invested in it? Because I would be interested.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us today. Please have a lovely morning, evening, afternoon, like, lunch, brunch, 4 a.m., 2 a.m., whatever time of the day and or night. Bye!
Oh, I'm an old lady. Okay.